Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another fantastic episode of Give Us the Launch Codes. I'm Tom Flores.
I'm Travis Baker, everybody.
We're glad to be back. We had about a 2-week vacation, didn't we, huh?
For us, yes. Yeah. Recording-wise, yes.
Nice. How was your 2 weeks? What did you do recently, man?
Yesterday, my wife and I took basically we had a tater tot day. We took Tatey first we took him to a breakfast place on 2nd Street in Long Beach. If you know where that is, it's a very nice place to just walk through. Even if you're not going to buy anything, you just walk through there. And then afterwards, we took him to the beach. Not just any part of the beach. If you're in Long Beach and you're going to the local beach in question, that area is called Belmont Shores. And on Belmont Shores is there's a specially designated area known as Rosie's Dog Beach. And it's exactly what you think it is. It's a place where you can take your dog, have him run around. And that's where we took Tatey. Get all that energy out of him. And once we started noticing he was tired, we took him back to the parking lot. And here's something cool I didn't realize existed, but this is why I love living in Long Beach. A food truck for pets. Mostly dogs, but there were a couple of cat items in there too. It was some guy, he got his trailer. The business is called Woof It Up LLC. Shout out to Woof It Up LLC. He put together a delicious pup cup for Tater Tot, and we also purchased a couple other items, including freeze-dried duck feet. Which
I like that.
Which is what you fed him.
it looked good to me. I was about to eat it.
A little dry treat that he can enjoy. So shout it out. Shout out to Woof It Up LLC. You make our community better by existing. Thank you. And then gave him a bath at PetSmart. Yeah, so he got a special.
He went to the spa.
He got a special bougie bath. And then later that day we had dinner at my in-laws. And my in-laws have their own dog, a big 80-something pound golden retriever, of whom Tater Tot knows as his Uncle Mickey. So he got to spend time with his best friend Uncle Mickey. He was so pooped out. I think he might be a little hungover because this morning he had a little accident in his crate, which is where his bed is.
Nice, so he had fun though.
He had too much fun. Good. What a wonderful day.
That's good, man. That's good. That's a nice way to spend the day. Alrighty, folks. For our new episode here, we thought we'd do a little something fun. Travis has been saying we need to get this going. So the whole point of this is called Give Us the Launch Codes. And the whole concept of this podcast, again, is just him and I felt that it doesn't take a genius to run this country, but it takes a fucking moron to think he needs all this shit that we see just to run it. So we thought we'd have a little fun, and for this one, we would talk about what would we do, each of us, if we were president. And obviously, we could go on and on, so we just said the top 10 things we would want to get done in our 1 to 2 terms as president. So we're going to kick it off, and before we kick it off, too, Travis, we got another sponsor today, another one, cheeseburgers.
That's what I had at my in-laws last night.
I had that yesterday.
It was Build Your Own Burger night.
I had a cheeseburger yesterday at Dalton's Cafe. It was a big bacon mushroom cheeseburger, and I had it with no condiments on it. It was just dry. It's nice. I liked it. So cheeseburgers, everyone, they're sponsoring us today. Cheeseburgers are great. You can put anything on it, literally an onion ring, bacon. You can put tomatoes, you can put lettuce, you can put chilies. You can literally, a cheeseburger is just great all around, with mayonnaise, with ketchup, with mustard, with guacamole. The secret sauce, guacamole. I've even seen people put a chicken on it, even fried chicken with their cheeseburger. Cheeseburger can go with anything. Yeah, I've seen a fried chicken cheeseburger. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Cheeseburgers, everyone. They're great. They're awesome. However you want it. Honestly, they've never gotten a complaint, and that's why they're sponsoring us today. So thank you, cheeseburgers. Everyone, I recommend you get a double-double from wherever you love your favorite cheeseburger. Our favorite cheeseburger place is Volcano Burger in Los Sal.
Mm-hmm.
Eat them up. Have two. Have three. I try to have four every time. It's great. They're good with fries, too. So cheeseburgers, they're our sponsor today.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to kick off this episode. Travis here just got inaugurated as our president, and he is going to tell us our 10 things I'll be changing in this country. Take it off, Mr. President. Yes, POTUS.
Yes, this is the moment of our podcast where we kind of put our cards on the table and see what we would do. I feel like this is something we should do every year just to kind of see.
Just update it?
Yeah, because, as I was putting this list together, at first I was worried I wouldn't be able to get to 10. But then as I was approaching 10, I realized I had like 20 more things, and maybe we could touch some of those when we do your top 10 later.
It's a two-parter, folks. Our first two-parter.
So as of 2025, here are the top 10 things I would do. I would try to get done as president. Also, just provided the rules, we're kind of going with dictator logic here. Like, I could just snap my fingers and make this happen. We're not going to go into the bullshit of like, well, how are you going to get this past Congress? You know that Mike Johnson is not going to go. This isn't about how we're going to get this done. This is about how we feel and what we think should get done, and that it should get done no matter what. I mean, politics is bullshit. It changes every decade. The politics of today is not what it was like back in 2015, and it wasn't what it was in 2025. So all this shit could change. This is just how we feel could get things done. That things that we feel, I feel at least, this is my episode, that we could get done.
As Emperor Palpatine once said,
I am the Senate.
So we'll start with, I'll start with number 10.
Okay.
Decriminalize drugs and drug use.
Talk to me about that.
The war on drugs has been one of the biggest, most disastrous policies the United States has had in the last century. Everyone who knows anything about the war on drugs knows that this policy started as a way for the government to persecute black and brown people without directly persecuting black and brown people in a post-Civil Rights Act era. It has done incalculable damage to poor communities across the United States. Gang culture and increased drug use, increased incarceration. And to go back to that quote that we used from The Wire.
Girl, you can't even call this shit a war.
Why not?
Wars end.
And if anything, we're making drug cartels even more popular, or more powerful, excuse me, by doing this. So
popular too, you could argue.
Oh, yeah.
Look at our TV shows. Yeah,
so it's like, it's just putting more people in prison and making people's lives worse, and we need to stop it. Drugs need to be treated as a health issue, not as a crime issue. We need to treat it as a health problem. We need to stop the overcrowding of our prisons based on just someone, they had, a couple ounces of coke on them. You got to go to prison for 15 years now. I would go so far as maybe suggest that we legalize all the drugs to get altogether, because at least if you legalize it, then you can regulate it and you can ensure that they are made. I mean, not that they're safe, but they could be made in a manner where, like, people don't overdose as easily. Whereas if they're made in a criminal enterprise, there's no...
It's cut with anything.
Yeah. There's no health regulation. There is no recourse for people getting hurt by a bad product. Because if you complain about it, they'll probably just kill you.
No, I get what you mean. Because one, as we all know, too, in the 80s, cocaine was clean. Like, nothing bad happened to you with really cocaine. Like, you got addicted if you kept using it a lot. But overall, mm-hmm. cocaine was, like, supposed to be not this adrenaline-shocked high. It was supposed to be mellow. Like, mm-hmm. pure cocaine is just a nice complement to your dance night, from what we know from the 80s, before it got, like, all dirtied up. So, so I understand. So, decriminalize it, legalize it.
This is why we legalize. This is why several states, including our state, California, has legalized marijuana. It's like, drugs are not a thing you're going to be able to eradicate. Everyone, I don't like it. I don't like that people feel like they have to self-medicate with bad substances like these. I also recognize that this is something we can't avoid. That people are going to find a way to get hooked on something.
It's human.
Yeah. And so the least, this is a very consequentialist way of thinking. The least we could do is make sure that if people are just inevitably going to give into their vices, that we make sure it ruins their lives as the least It
ruins your lives in the least way possible, because a drug is going to ruin your life, but at least what you're saying is a drug will ruin your life to some degree, but we're trying to lower that degree because it's such a human thing.
And instead put our investment in making sure that when people hit bottom, that they don't die and that they can get themselves back on their feet and find an alternative that doesn't require them self-medicate.
Well, I know, I get that, because one, like you said, our TV shows have kind of popularized drug kingpins and drug lords, and, you know, like Narcos, everyone loves that show. Mm-hmm. Was it Snowfall? Everyone loves that show. Mm-hmm. So legalizing it, you make it uncool, which is, that's the point. And then two, it's the failure of like the DARE program. Just say no. Well, why am I saying no? Just tell me the information about this drug, and I, as a person, you know, as a thinking person, will make that decision now for myself with the information. You can't just say don't do a drug. You got to explain it to me. Tell me what it does. Tell me what it can do to me. Tell me what it'll do. Yeah. And then it's like alcohol. Alcohol is not good for you. We all know that. It's fun.
Yeah.
You know me. I love gin like a lot. Yeah. I love my gin, and I love my Miller High Life. I know 5 beers in. Like, Tom, what are you doing? 7 shots of gin? Tom, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, if that's bad, but it's taxed and legalized, then there's a way to inform people about the dangers of all these drugs.
Yeah, and it'll deprive power from said drug lords, because if people have a safer way to buy and safer ways to help themselves, they won't have as much power, they won't get as much money, and they won't be able to stoke as much fear into the populaces, whether in the United States or in less developed countries.
And the last thing I'll say with that, just because it's a big topic you brought up, if people who are against your idea of legalizing all drugs and the decriminalization of it, it's like, all right, then throw away all your music albums, because all those artists were on a drug to make all that music you like, right?
Yeah, those guys needed help, yeah.
Exactly. Okay, what's your next one?
Next one, I put investment. This sounds really bland when I read this out loud. Investment in alternative energy and transportation. Fossil fuels are not going to be here forever, and their emissions cause a lot of destruction. I think we all get this.
Yeah.
I also, but on a different angle, on like a non-environmental angle on this, the investment in alternative transportation. You know, here in Los Angeles, in LA County area, public transit is kind of a joke.
That's a tamed way of putting it.
I mean, I've been to other places where it's way worse, but, you know, when you visit, like, New York City, it's amazing how you can pretty much get anywhere with a subway, or with a bus, or even with a taxi system. Like, every time I've ever traveled to New York, I've never had to rent a car. No. I've always been able to get where I needed to go without transporting myself, and I would never ever want to drive on those streets anyway. You know, there are times when I wish I didn't have to like drive everywhere, and I wish there was more investment in transportation, in public transit, and I always found that more public investment in public transit in a way that like will get normal people to use it, because one of the things about, this is going to sound classist, one of the things about public transit here right now is that a lot of people that use it are, like, very poor, and some of them are a lot of people without homes and probably have serious mental illness problems. There was one time I had to work some gig that was in downtown LA that was, like, at the convention center, and I just decided to take the train. Because I'm like, I mean, can you imagine? Have you driven to downtown Los Angeles before?
I hate LA, dude. Yes, yeah. I hate driving. Hate driving outside of OC.
Oh, free parking at the train station, and then I just take the train, and then like I take the A line, and there's a stop at Pico Station, and it's like the convention center's right there. So that's like, if I go to LA Comic Con or the LA Auto Show, I always take that train. Yeah. But the cost is, there's a lot of weirdos that take the train, and not enough
mild-mannered citizens.
People like me that have a choice, because I have a choice. I am privileged enough to have a choice to not do that. But I choose to do it because I just find it more cost-effective. But, sometimes you get, like, people that really should be in a, institutionalized, and they desperately need help, and I don't know, it just sometimes they display behavior that make you feel unsafe, and you're like, I'm getting off. I'm going to wait for the next train. And I just wish there were more options for transportation that in my area. And, you know, that's something I was thinking about when I put that down.
That makes sense, because look at what, for example, Japan, London, and like you said, New York, their transportation systems are great. On time, they're like a work of art.
Yeah.
So it shouldn't be that hard to incorporate that anywhere in this country.
My wife and I have a friend who we visit a lot who lives in downtown Long Beach. And I once suggested to my wife, hey, you know, what if we just took the bus? I'm sure we could take the bus system and get there, you know, just as easily. And she was like, I don't want to take the bus. There are weirdos on the bus. I don't want to take the bus. So I'm like,
I don't think the last time I took the bus was when I was like maybe 8 or 9 with my mom, and that was in Orange County, and it was like after that, nope, because it's anywhere. It seems like the bus anywhere in any part of the country, unfortunately, where it's like, I get what you're saying. No, it should be a very communal, it was like that in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, there was a time when that was like, maybe it's the city, maybe it's the fact that LA area, it was kind of designed to be more car-centric, and there's some criminal reasons why that was.
But people still took the bus, the trolley, you know, like, I'm just saying, like, you know.
LA used to have, like, a very robust...
the red car.
The red car system.
Yeah.
And then, what was it? I think, like, Goodyear and GM basically conspired to, like, privatize that, buy it out, put it out of business so they could build more roads for cars instead. I mean, we used to have that's a thing. Like, the auto industry destroyed... We used to have really good public transportation a long time ago in LA, and then the auto industry destroyed that, which is now why LA is considered, like, you know, one of the car capitals of the world. Like, every single possible car you can think of drives on LA roads. There's such a car culture out here. It was caused by really dirty politics.
It would be nice to have a good transportation system, because I think about my family. Like, we have 4 cars, one for my mom, one for my wife, one for me, one for my dad. And it would be cool where it's just we own 2 cars, and my dad and I can just take a public transit to get to work and get back, and my mom and my wife have the cars. Yeah. It'd be cool if, like, you only really need 1 car for a household. And if you want 2, that's on you, kind of thing. But it'd be cool to get down to that, because I would just like to take the bus, go back and forth. I'd like to. That's cool. I wish that would be nice.
Yeah.
What's your third thing?
My third one, restore the tax code to the standards of the 1950s. Rich people used to get taxed a lot more than they do now. Of course, you know, they bought out. Well, you know, they also bought politicians that said, hey, would you lower your taxes for me? And now you get a situation where you got these, like, mega billionaires, like Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos, who they find there's all sorts of loopholes where they can basically pay no taxes at all. That needs to stop. And you'll see this in conservative media where they try to paint this as like, oh, the damn leftists are trying to punish people for success. No. Jeff Bezos had a successful business. I'll give him some credit there. Elon Musk is mostly rich because he, you know, is able to please stockholders somehow. But, you know, he's not getting rich. He's not getting that rich by selling Teslas. He's just getting that rich because a lot of people want to invest in him. At least a lot of people want to invest in him right now. We'll see how that goes with his Tesla stock and other stocks. But, you know, the reason those type of people are richer than ever before, it's because they're not getting as taxed as, like, they would have been, like, decades ago.
Our mascot agrees. Tater Tot's like, yes. He agrees with his dad.
I mean, when you have people that are, you know, so wealthy that they can invest, that they can basically invest in their own private space program so that they could escape to Mars. But then you have people who have no home, who are without a roof over their head, and are in desperate need of some sort of physical or mental or any kind of care, and whose life expectancy is dropping by the week. That is not right. Absolutely. That is a diseased society. And that needs to change. They tax those individuals and put that money into bringing our less fortunate back on their feet, and put us into, and then, well, not mean to get too radical, but then I'll just say, see where we can go from there, right? Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry, that is just way too rampant. Like, Bezos, the Musks, the fucking Zuckerbergs, Gateses, they all need to be taxed properly again.
So what else you got, President?
So number 7, I have that the United States should ratify the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court. Now, in the modern world, we, at least in theory, believe in this concept of international law, which is to say that everybody in the world is bound by rules on how we should and should not treat people, and therefore supposedly that there is a lawful and implied ethical way to do war, which is a concept I'm still, I still need convincing of, that there is a legal and ethical way to do war, but that's the world we live in, and as a consequentialist, I think the United States should be on board with that idea. In reality, the United States has not ratified the Rome Statute. We do not consider ourselves under the jurisdiction of the International Criminal Court. We don't necessarily recognize its authority, and we wield that. We've tried to sanction them a couple of times, especially most recently since the ICC put out arrest warrants for Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his now former defense minister Yoav Gallant for alleged war crimes in the Israel's recent assault into Gaza as a response to the October 7th attacks. Mind you, that the ICC was also going to issue warrants against senior members of Hamas until Israel killed them, so they can't do that anymore. Yeah, the United States, we have a troubled relationship with the powers that are supposed to enforce international law, so much so that during the Bush administration, we passed a law. I think it's called the American Servicemen Protection Act, but it's nicknamed as the Invade the Hague Law, which says that if any American serviceman or official is not only charged with a crime by an international body like the ICC, and gets detained for it, like they're in another country and they suddenly get arrested, the United States grants itself the authority to launch a full invasion of the Netherlands to rescue that guy. We're like, oh yeah, you did some war crimes in Iraq? Well, we're not going to let you be held accountable for it. Which is probably why the ICC has been very hesitant to charge American soldiers and American officials with war crimes, even though they could most certainly do that, or there are certainly war crimes that could be, that charges could be levied for. So that needs to change. I think the United States needs to get on board with this idea that we are not above the law, that if there is an international law, that we are not beyond it, and we should not be a bully against that concept. We, if anything, should be altruistic, equal opportunity enforcers of said international law, and most certainly we should not be inviting people like Netanyahu to Congress to speak to Congress. Any questions?
No, it's pretty straightforward to that one. I was like, okay, so just bring it back, ratify it. Almost like you're saying, just holding America itself to also the higher standard that the world can almost look up to.
Yeah. Because right now we think we can just drone strike any place we like. And we'll justify it as national security, but like America thinks it can do whatever it wants.
Bill Hicks had a funny stand-up bit about that when it was Bush Senior's term.
What's G12 do, Tommy? Well, it says here it destroys everything but the fillings in their teeth. Helps us pay for the war effort. Well, shit, pull that one up. Pull up G12, please. Cool. What's G13 do?
All right. So my next one, number six. I wrote fund the Department of Education, but I think for all we know by the time this comes out, I might have to rephrase that to reinstate the Department of Education, since the Trump-Musk administration is putting forth efforts to shut it down. Thanks to executive orders and thanks to the department's leadership of, Linda McMahon? Vince McMahon's wife, former wrestling executive in charge of dictating how we educate our children. Very, very smart. Very smart people involved. So not only should we devote more funding into the Department of Education, I think we need to, amongst a bunch of other things, I think at this moment in time, we need to put a further emphasis on critical thinking studies, which will allow people to better suss out propaganda, suss out authority from said governments. There are a lot of forces in the United States that absolutely do not want this to happen and have been putting forth efforts in more localized legislations, like state and cities and counties across the country, to try to diminish critical studies education. Because if more people were capable of critical thinking, Fox News wouldn't have an audience.
Goes without saying.
Fox News wouldn't have an audience, and their benefactors would not be able to get away with a lot of things thanks to their propaganda assistance.
And for our fans who are listening, the time of recording is March 24th, so that's why we assume when this episode does come out and airs, that it probably would be not funding, it'd be reinstating. Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's some legal issues like that they're going to have to, that the Trump administration is going to have to deal with. Like, I think Congress still has to approve of it, like approve of abolishing a cabinet department. But we do have a Republican Congress, and we have the opposition, at least in the Senate, is run. Well, yeah, no. I'm not going to let Hakeem Jeffries off the hook. Our opposition in Congress is left by Hakeem Jeffries and Chuck Schumer, who seem like they'd rather just whine but not actually do anything, given that Chuck Schumer allowed the government to not shut down when he could have wielded his leverage to force the Trump administration to have its power limited. But he didn't want to do that because he is a stooge of Wall Street, and stocks were going down over fear of a government shutdown. So he's like, "Well, I can't let that happen." So I'm not holding out hope that the D of Ed is gonna survive through this term.
Our students compared to other countries, why we're testing so low? It also just like it starts at home, like. And there's nothing wrong with saying, like, yeah, the parents are the problem, too. Like, whatever your kid brings home, schoolwork and questions about it, you got to work with the kid. You can't just, you know, go like, oh, do your homework over here while I'm just doing this. It's like you got to be a part of your kid's education for their whole lives, really.
I mean, I'm sure there's definitely bad parenting in some cases. I think it's also just a lot of parents are overworked, working longer hours for stagnated pay to try to keep a roof over their children. A lot of parents that are probably too exhausted or just not home very often to help them out with their schoolwork and stuff like that. That's a problem. And just, I think there's a lot of schools that are, I mean, a lot of schools are funded based on kind of the, you know, property taxes of the area that they're in. And poverty is like, you know, there is a link between poverty and like low test scores. Because, you know, poverty, you have to work, you're probably not eating very much, and that affects how you process information that you're being taught. That affects your mind, that affects your work ethic. If you don't have enough to eat, if you're constantly having to worry, maybe you're living in a car and not living in an apartment or a house. There's like a lot of factors that can affect a child's ability to learn education. And at present state, our education system isn't really outfitted. Tater Tot is very distressed about this, if you heard that. Our education system needs adjustment. It needs reform, and I will not argue against it. But the solution is not, oh, let's just tear down the whole thing and then do nothing. Let the private sector pick it up, because, you know, the private sector is just going to work for people who can pay, and then a couple of people who win a lottery. But it's not going to service everyone. There's going to be people left behind, in contrast to No Child Left Behind, an initiative that the DOED once had under Bush. There's a lot of work that can be done. And I guess that's, like, I probably should include that in there as well. But the thing that was just on my mind when I put this list was critical thinking education. We need an electorate that has a better ability, that is better able to challenge authority, kind of like what I talked about in the scams episode. That we need more media literacy classes. Right. We need students to be able to learn how to read the news and be able to dig deep. It's like, okay, you know, active language versus passive language. Who owns this newspaper? Who is not being featured? Who was not interviewed for this article? What side is not being taken into account? That, those kind of things. We need more of that. We need more classes like, and these are like classes that you can take in college if you can get to college. Some people don't go to college. You didn't finish college. You know, these should be like high school courses. These should be things that we teach for, like, mandatory schooling.
What's your number five?
Military spending crackdown?
I mean, number six, sorry, number six, right?
Well, I'm counting backwards.
Oh.
I'm counting backwards to number one. So, number five, military spending crackdown. We've talked about this before, how the Pentagon keeps failing its audits. We spend more on our military than, A, we really need to, B, like, the next few countries combined. A lot of it is just, and it is just to benefit a bunch of private companies that will then encourage our administration to use our war machine and war powers to ignite more conflict, to stoke more conflict, so that their stocks can go up. And we really gotta clamp down on that and really reassess what the purpose of our military is. What do we actually need to address and, like, legitimate national security threats? You know, we grew up in, like, two of the most egregious conflicts that we've ever engaged in, Afghanistan and Iraq, the so-called War on Terror, and that was all military-industrial complex bullshit. That was all, like, private contractors being like, hey, we can make some money. Make some money off of selling weapons. We can make some money off of, like, the oil we can get from there. I want the system to change so that we don't ever do something like that again. I'm glad that right now the vibe in the country, even amongst MAGA, is like, we don't want war. We don't want conflict. That does make me feel better. It does make me feel like, okay, it's not just a Democrat, liberal, lefty thing. Like, a lot of people in the United States do not want to engage in conflict right now. And that does make me feel good. But I know that can change, because that was the vibe after Vietnam. And then after Vietnam, it's like, well, Reagan's like, you want to invade Nicaragua? Boo! Okay, all right. We'll just do little operations. We'll invade the Gulf. We'll help out the Kuwait in their little conflict that we might have stoked as well. And, you know, and we'll do little operations here and there. Okay, are you guys ready for war now? Like,
it can change, because also too, we know that, for example, everything going on with Ukraine and Russia, and then Israel and Hamas, like, it's still not solved, and it seems like it's still getting escalated. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, no, it could change again. I mean, hell, even though I understand what it is to protecting trade routes, we're, you know, attacking Yemen pirates. So, the thing is, it could still lead to an escalation of a conflict to war, mm-hmm. regardless of what we're doing it for.
Number four, I have used the Federal Trade Commission, have the Federal Trade Commission commit to its original purpose, which is to go after monopolies.
Do not pass go. Do not collect $200.
And my shortcut to that, my parentheses, is just get Lena Khan back on the FTC to chair that organization and and she'll tackle monopolies. Lina Khan was the chair of the FTC under Joe Biden's administration. She's probably the most radical person ever to serve on there. She was willing to go after Amazon and Microsoft and a lot of big companies like that when they would attempt to acquire a big company. She unsuccessfully, but under her tenure, the FTC did try to stop the Activision Blizzard merger. The Activision merger Blizzard under Microsoft. Yeah. Not the Activision merging into Blizzard was earlier, but when Microsoft bought them out, they were unsuccessful. But the fact that I still respect that they tried to do that. And we need a more aggressive. We need to be more aggressive about monopolies in this country. You want to know why a lot of movies out right now. This is what I think of when I think of monopolies. I think of the movie business. You want to know why a lot of movies are just the ones that get put into theaters. A lot of remakes. A lot of adaptations of things that you've heard of. A lot of sequels.
30-year later sequels?
30, Force Awakens-esque sequels.
Why is that, yeah?
Well, we have... How many companies do we have, making movies now? You have Disney. You have, Paramount. These are, the corporations. So Disney, Paramount, Sony, Warner Brothers, Amazon, Netflix. Yeah, you got your smaller stuff, your Neon, 824s, and that sort of thing, but...
The main ones are just only that you see in theaters.
The big one, you see in theaters, because a lot of those smaller ones, those are, independent films.
Yeah.
A24 is now getting into production, but most of what they do is distribution. That's their bread and butter. There used to be more companies that made movies and distributed movies, and that were not under, the same conglomerate. There's five different TV studios that make TV. In the 80s, it was 40. And then they all got sold and bought out. One of the most groundbreaking TV dramas of the 80s, Hill Street Blues, was produced by MTM Enterprises, which was Mary Tyler Moore's company. Fox bought that out.
You're saying that how it was bought out and how it used to be 40, now it's basically 8. It's like what George Carlin said about the oil companies. It was
you don't need a formal conspiracy when interests converge. These people went to the same universities and fraternities. They're on the same boards of directors. They're in the same country clubs. They have like interests. They don't need to call a meeting. They know what's good for them. They're getting it. And there used to be 7 oil companies. There are now 3. It will soon be 2. The things that matter in this country have been reduced in choice. There are 2 political parties. There are a handful of insurance companies. There are about 6 or 7 information things. But if you want a bagel, there are 23 flavors because you have the illusion. You have the illusion of choice.
Right.
You don't get the real important choice. There's no freedom of choice.
That's a great point.
Right. And it's the less competition there is, the less need to compete, the less need to risk take. And therefore the movies get worse. That they're putting money into just sort of, unchallenging slop. And it's because nobody wants to take a risk. Nobody feels like they can have to take a risk, because what is the competition offering? Not much.
No.
It's the same thing. So better safe than sorry. Better play it safe than get fired. These mergers and acquisitions, a lot of these need to stop. And also Amazon, take companies like Amazon and Google, where they don't even buy out other companies. They just Amazon's we do groceries now. I mean, yeah, they bought out Whole Foods, but now they got those Amazon Fresh stores, which are more like Whole Foods is bougie, but Amazon Fresh is more generic groceries, competing with your Ralphs and Kroger and Pavilions and Vons. And it's they just do groceries. Amazon was founded to sell books. That company's original purpose was to sell books online, and now it's we sell everything. We have our, we don't even use third-party shippers. We just have our own vans and planes. Jeff Bezos is we're going to launch to the moon with the Blue Origin project. It's Amazon wants to be in it. Oh, yeah, Amazon. Oh, that's right. This year, Amazon just announced that they're doing pharmaceuticals now.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So they're trying to compete with, like, Walgreens and CVS and companies like that. You know, just these companies that, like, they can just tap into other industries on their own, and that needs to stop. Because that's also hurting the market. That's giving, like, companies like Amazon and Google, like, more control over things. I mean, the fact that like, if you have an Apple computer and Apple search engine or search a browser, their main browser is Safari. Well, if you type in the search bar in Safari, it's using Google. I mean, that's an antitrust problem right there, and they've gotten sued over that.
Right.
We really need to tackle stuff like this. This is what made this is kind of what made the FTC under Biden kind of promising. It was like, oh shit, they actually care about antitrust. Oh, this is awesome. It's too bad they didn't campaign on that. And now we have Trump, and Trump is like, you know, the Trump administration is run by a bunch of oligarchs who are like, yeah, let's do whatever we want. Let's buy out whoever we want and do whatever we want. And yeah, so
I know the big main problem with monopolies is it's not the ebb and flow of the market controlling the price. It's the company itself, because there's no competition, so they can just price whatever they want.
Yeah. They can control the price. They can they can price gouge.
Yeah. That's dangerous. It's not good. It's not good for anyone.
We saw that happen with the like in recent years with you know with COVID, and of course the aftermath of COVID, where grocery stores are like, we meant to talk about this in an earlier episode, but we didn't. We're like, grocery stores, they just price gouge because they can now. And they can blame it on inflation or whatever. But no, it's just they're jacking up the prices and no one's telling them to stop.
No free parking.
Number three, contentious. But I think we need to start looking at a universal basic income system.
Break it down for me. What's your thoughts? What's your plan?
I think some people have said we should call this Social Security for All, which is an interesting idea. But basically, I think we're getting to a point as, you know, there's no stopping automation. And as the rich get richer and the poor get poorer, it makes the economy more unstable. And the people in charge of running the economy don't care that it makes the economy more unstable, because it's just going to make them richer anyway. Like, they're going to be fine. The rest of us won't be. So, I think we need to have some sort of system where it's like, no matter what, you have like just the bare minimum amount of like, you know, fixed income, and you'll still get like, some people have said like, no, people won't go out and work. No, I think they'll be more motivated to work, particularly for like jobs that they want to have, not jobs that they need to like survive. If it's like, if you have a little bit of a safety net, maybe enough to like get like a very modest apartment and just to pay your rent, get your food and water, you know, just to keep you afloat, that like just a regular little check in the mail. You know, we kind of experimented with this under COVID, and it helped a lot of people. I don't think that did enough. I think that if everyone had a safety net, well, it would be good for the economy, because they're going to spend that money, and they're going to spend that money on things that they need.
As we saw with COVID, everyone spent that check like crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's like, well, I need stuff. I got to eat. I got to eat, and I got to pay my rent. So I think that could be, I'm not saying that's going to be like a be all or end all solution.
But you're saying it's maybe a start towards the solution.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think everybody needs a safety net. Like, I think that would be a very helpful safety net. We live in a world where you need to have money to survive. That is how our system is constructed. If you don't have money, you're kind of fucked. And
better be in the wilderness and know how to hunt and forage, and
or you go to you engage with criminal enterprises, like, you know, prostitution, sex work, trafficking, drugs,
guns,
you know, these criminal enterprises, a lot of them exist. They're populated by desperate people because they can't, for what they are not able to get work anywhere else. And usually those that are unfortunate to not get involved with that, well, a lot of them probably have mental problems too. I think we need to start looking at a universal basic income system. I think we need to put that together. Don't ask me the specifics of how it would work. I'm just saying we need to do it.
It's just to start working on a solution.
Yeah. And once we do it, it'll be like with Social Security where, you know, we're going to haggle for years about, like, how much are we putting in? Should we raise the debt ceiling? And blah, blah. But it'll be there. And I think it's... And people are going to be like, don't get rid of that. I'm going to riot if you do. So, right. Yeah, that's me there. Number two, this is more popular. And I was going to say, don't tell the Democrats that. But no, do tell the Democrats because they like to go, la, 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 la. What is that about healthcare? La, la, la. I am talking about a universal healthcare system, more popularly in the United States, known as Medicare for All or M4A. Everyone needs health insurance. And for-profit health insurance. We have some of the best medical care in the world. And we pay more for medical care, but most people get less for what they pay for it. More for medical care compared to other developed nations. That's because other developed nations have a universal system. And we don't. We have a for-profit system. Because we don't... Our society, is when it comes to healthcare, is not structured around the concept of healthcare is a right. Healthcare is a privilege. And that is wrong. Healthcare should be a right. I believe healthcare should be a right. And having a universal system, like just expanding Medicare for everyone, that is how you get there. Just everyone pays in. It's going to cost, like, yeah, it might be like a few cents more in your taxes. That's going to be way less. A few cents more, a few dollars more. It's going to be way less than what you pay for actual health insurance. Way less. And you get more coverage. You get all the coverage. Not just like, oh, you can only see certain doctors here and there. I'd like to get a checkup soon. Yeah. I haven't gotten to it because I'm having a hard time finding a doctor that goes along with my plan, that like lives close to me. And it's like, and also like the health insurance company gave me like it's like an app that, you know, oh, here are all the doctors that are covered, and here's all their phone numbers. Most of the phone numbers don't actually work. So this is like, you're like, oh, this app is bullshit. This is what you give me? This is what private health insurance gives me? I don't know what, like, all I want to do is go to the local Memorial Care Urgent Center and be like, hey, can I get a checkup? Give me a doctor, tell my weight. Am I overweight? Am I underweight? Do I have heart problems? Am I going to have heart problems? Like, I just want to see a fucking doctor. I don't want to have to mince over, oh, is it covered by, like, the PPO or the HMO? No.
Whose leg do I have to hump to get a finger in my butt, damn it? I just want my balls cupped. Just tell me.
Because, you know, I don't want to, like, go to a random doctor and it's like, oh, I get this massive bill for a checkup. Ooh, and my insurance is like, ooh. He's not covered. You're going to have to pay the whole thing, fucko. Like, no. Uh-uh. No American should have to worry about that. I fucking hate it. And I know, and I can't be the only one that hates that. And that is like small potatoes compared to other bullshit that goes on with health insurance that sometimes gets people killed. It's like, you have a lot of people. One of the reasons why I wanted to get a checkup is because I was like, you know what? I don't want to be one of those people that doesn't get a checkup over a fear of how much it's going to cost them. And then I find out later that I have this terrible condition that I could have stopped had I got checked up earlier. A lot of Americans die because of that. And that's a problem. That is a man-made problem. That's not natural. That's not how society should be run. That is a man-made cancerous problem of society. And that is my argument for why we need to have a socialist healthcare system, if you will. Why not? Why not? They're going to call it that anyway. Might as well just embrace it. But universal healthcare.
Yeah, so because if they're not going to tell you how much it costs beforehand, then you find out later. It's like, oh, yeah, we did a liver test on you, and now it's this much. I'm like, why didn't you just tell me before, too? Like, at the same time, like, I'm going to get it, but just tell me, like, at that point.
All right, and my last one, my number one.
The numero uno for El Presidente.
Finally, pass the Equal Rights Amendment. This is basically, and actually, I'd probably like ratify the amendment itself too, because this was like, you know, supposed to enshrine in the United States Constitution the inherent equality between men and women. This was first proposed in 1923. It gained a lot of traction in the 70s and 80s. There's a lot of, and there's some like debate as to whether or not like it could be ratified now based on like when the expiration date for when it could be ratified is, or if there should even be an expiration date because of some Supreme Court precedent. Fuck all that. Just do it now. Just put it in the Constitution now. Men and women are to be treated in this country as equal citizens, and then ratify that to include, you know, race, religion, creed, sexual orientation, and dare I say it, you know, gender identity. Like, I don't say dare
just
I
be,
say it.
Just be treated like a human, basically. Yeah. That's what you're getting at.
I think that needs to be firmly enshrined in our Constitution, and it's a shame. It's criminal that, like, any version of that had not been able to be put inside the Constitution yet. It definitely isn't going to happen right now.
Since the 20s, too. That's over 100 years ago.
It was proposed in 1923.
That's over 100 years ago.
Yeah, so that's my number one. It's like, we just need to have that firmly on the books, you know, fully divorce the Constitution from the patriarchal white supremacist origins of the founding fathers, and just be like, it's 2025, man. This is a new America. Our Constitution needs to recognize that. It's a new America, a new American people, for all American people. And dare I say, all people that live in America, regardless if you're undocumented or not. Pass the ERA. My number one policy. If I was president, just make it happen.
Makes sense. When you're in my house, everyone's treated like my mom and dad and my wife and the kids.
Mm-hmm.
It's dumb. I didn't even know that was a thing still. It kind of reminds me when you're the last few you were talking about of a line from a movie, a song called "A Tower of Song." Various singers have sung it. Tom Jones is the one I like his rendition. It was basically just saying that in this song here. The rich have got their channels in the bedrooms of the poor, and there's a mighty judgment coming, but I may be wrong. Kind of just the whole thing about it all. Ooh. So that reminded me of that Tom Jones cover of Tower of Song.
It's just what you're telling me is nothing crazy in my book.
I like that. I like that bit where he says, but I might be wrong. Because I think it's kind of like that idea that, like, just wait for the revolution to come. It's like, what if it doesn't come?
Mm-hmm.
Or what if you sitting on your ass and waiting for it to come, it doesn't happen? It's like I think a lot of people, no matter what their politics, are kind of waiting for this day of reckoning to happen when suddenly everything is going to be fixed. Whether you're a lefty and you believe the great proletariat revolution is going to happen, or you're a MAGA head who might believe in QAnon and believe in the storm is going to come take out the pedophile elite. everybody just wants this, like, Jesus will come down and everything will be right. Well, you know what? We need to operate as if Jesus isn't going to come down anytime soon. If he does, great, and sorts this all out, that could be wonderful. But in the meantime,
it's in our hands.
It's in our hands. It's in all of our hands.
And that is that's what President Baker here would do. Those 10 things in his for sure his first term. First 100 days.
First 100 days.
That means something, I guess. And that's the end of part 1 for this two-parter we're doing right now. Hope you all enjoyed it. It was really good to be back after our two-week vacation, man. This has been nice. It's kind of been a relaxing episode, too. I've been just really in a nice, just relaxed mood.
It's nice to kind of put our cards on the table like this. I can't wait till we get to yours. He's giving me the most evil smile, so get ready, folks. In the meantime, if you want to see more of my current event, socio-political musings, or you want to just see photos of my dog, you can find me on Instagram at Musical Note XTR. We've never done our socials on here before, but that's because I'm the only one here with socials.
I'm a troglodyte.
And so you can't find him. You can't find Tom anywhere.
But we are slowly getting our own podcast social set up soon. We just got a social media manager. So hopefully in the near future, you'll be seeing some Instagram and TikToks of this podcast we're doing. We're slowly growing, taking our time. We're not rushing anything here because we've been really wanting to make sure this is going to be just consistent and continues for as long as we draw breath.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us. Travis, thanks for opening up your thoughts and minds to us about really just the way to get this country back on track, or even a better track.
I think a better track. I don't like the old track. I want a new track.
I just want the old school way soda was done.
With real sugar?
Yeah. The cane sugar.
Cane sugar, baby.
All right, well, thanks again, everyone, for joining us. We're just happy to get back. That's the end of this episode. Once again, thanks for joining us here. We're having fun on Give Us the Launch Codes. And I'm Tom.
I'm Travis.
Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Bye, everyone.